Chen Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Voices whisper, ancient secrets, signs and symbols are abundant. UFOs, ETs, ghosts, and even the dead move about freely. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Trish McGregor and
Rob McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, the disembodied voice, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com where we make regular blog posts where you can find out about our books. Among them are Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Abilities, The Secrets of Spirit Communication, Sensing the Future, and Aliens in the Backyard. The latest book is called Mind-Blowing Synchronicity. Trish's latest novel is White Crows, and Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas. If you're watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate if you'd take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification button so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it's available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there. Rob?
Okay, we have two guests today. Norma J. Burton is a counselor with a degree in comparative religion, focusing on Buddhists and the shamanic traditions, who specializes in trauma healing, shadow work, and dream analysis. Having apprenticed with indigenous elders for over 30 years, she founded the Institute of Ancient Healing Arts and the Circle of Trust Healing Center. Nisha Burton, Norma's daughter, is a skilled dream worker, trained in the art of journeying into the deep subconscious from a young age. For the past decade, she has been immersed in the practice of lucid dreaming. She is also an award-winning filmmaker and a branding and emerging technologies consultant for Fortune 100 companies. She is a speaker and teacher at universities. Norma and Jean are the co-authors of Navigating Liminal Realms, and they live in Ashland, Oregon. Welcome, both of you.
Glad that you guys made it. We were getting worried.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, great. Okay, so what inspired you to write a book about psychonavigation and altered states of consciousness? And could you start by explaining the term psychonavigation?
Definitely, yeah. I'll start by laying the groundwork of what that term means. So,
okay.
Kind of hear it in the word psychonavigation, but it's all about learning how to navigate your psyche, your inner world, and non-ordinary reality that exists within all of us. And so within our book, what really inspired us to write it is that we, as you have talked about in the introduction, we've been working with these spaces for a long time. I've been working with lucid dreaming and learning how to go into my psyche that way, how to work in these profound spaces where, and I'll just level set another term, lucid dreaming is a dream in which you know beyond a doubt that you're dreaming within the dream. And so then once you have that realization, the dream quality changes. It becomes very, very real, and you're able to interact with your dream material in a way that you couldn't before because you have this level of knowing and agency within the dream. So that is a space that you can profoundly learn how to navigate in your psyche. And then similarly, my mom works with drumming journeys, trance journeys, bringing people into this non-ordinary reality within themselves through the drum beat, and then also her deep shadow work and trauma healing. And both of us felt very passionate about teaching people how to do these things, how to learn how to go inside of themselves, especially in these times when psychedelics are becoming so popular again and people are experimenting and journeying with these various altering substances, knowing how to work first with oneself in these altered state experiences just by going into themselves then lays a really important groundwork for going into altered states with substances outside of yourself, like plant medicines.
I think it's fascinating that you worked with Florinda Donner. Some years ago, Rob and I met her. Rob, where was that? I can't even remember.
No, we didn't meet her. We met, Marilyn Tunishende.
Oh, that's right, Marilyn Tunishende.
Was a different person who was supposedly associated with Carlos Castaneda, so she said. So,
yes, it is interesting that I got to work with Florinda Donner, her other two women. The opportunity just arose magically when I lived in the Berkeley area in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Appeared out of nowhere for a period of time, as I was saying in the book, and they called us forth with some pretty high standards of what they wanted us to practice. And I think that's a good point to emphasize to people, is that the ancient ways of learning psychonavigation take a lot of dedication and a lot of practice and a lot of time. And I apprenticed with them for as long as they were available, which was about a year, but I apprenticed with the Huichol for over 20 years.
Oh.
With other groups, you know, for 5 years, because it's not a quick process to learn to psychonavigate in one's own psyche.
How did you raise your daughter in all this? That when I was reading your book, I thought, wow, this is pretty incredible.
Right? Nisha was, right from the get-go, a very active dreamer from the time she was a baby. I think a lot of people are, maybe most people, but their parents might not affirm it, or they just don't pay attention to it or discredit it. But with me being nurtured in my own dream time by my parents and grandparents, I was, of course, excited to share her and her dreaming. And then also I took her with me throughout her childhood to all of the different places around the world and shamanic teachers. So she grew up in that lineage of being held by indigenous elders and seen at a young age as being gifted in these realms.
And she didn't rebel at age 14
or 16 or whatever.
Right. Well, it's pretty cool what the Huichol, for example, do with teenage person, because they realize that their brains are rapidly changing, you know, like our just proven in the West too, that their minds are actually going into a very fluid and neural link, you know, like in the neurotransmitters are becoming, they're changing so rapidly and becoming different than they were as a child. So Huichol have adults hold the children in a very beautiful community container and ask the child to agree not to take any altering substances of any kind throughout their whole teenage years. And then a young adult, a big initiation is done into the adult community, and they're brought in a ceremonial way. Wouldn't that be wonderful if our culture?
Yeah.
Wow, that would sure lick a lot of problems.
Everything, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
So what was like that? What was that like for you, Nisha?
Yeah, it was a way to be raised, right? To be able to see how various cultures approach ordinary reality in the dream time, because in our culture, it's quite separated, right? And ordinary reality is held up as the pinnacle of what we all need to be focused on and what's the work. And then the dream time is disregarded. It's saying, you know, oh, that was just a dream.
Like, right.
For your dreams, forget them. However, in other cultures, I really got to see that in a young age, a bicultural life, multicultural life, of how they really put importance on the dream time. And there's so much integration between the various phases of reality that our consciousness goes through. And so being raised in that way, it really encouraged me, like my mom was just saying, to give value to my dream time and to integrate the two realities and to let them inform one another and learn from, okay, my dream is telling me this. So this is helping me in my waking reality, or, oh, I see how this problem that I was trying to work through in waking reality is appearing in my dreams and I'm finding solutions. So I feel like it's a very big gift when we're taught how to walk in both worlds.
Now, when you were pregnant, I'm sorry, Rob, with this mother-daughter thing, it's fascinating to me. When you were pregnant with her, did you have any inkling about what she would be like?
Oh,
what kind of soul she was?
I'd love to talk about that because before I knew I was pregnant, I had an amazing dream that I was in a waiting room, waiting, didn't know what I was waiting for. A young woman walked into the room dressed like in a white lab coat, like a doctor or something. And she came over to me and said, "Come with me. You're the one I've chosen."
Huh.
And what am I chosen for? Follow me. And so I walked through a door and then it was catapulting me through like a wormhole in space-time.
Huh.
And we ended up in this other dimension, other world maybe. And she transformed into this very tall, blue skin, purplish, bluish skin being that was glistening like light, you know, and I was very intimidated and wanted to stand back. But she said, "No, you have to come forward with me because I brought you here to introduce you." And so I went in front of this huge crowd of people and she said, "This is the one I've chosen." And to me, she said,
"Wow.
These beings will be protecting you and helping you through this mission." And then they all came forward and brought me gifts, and I was crying and said, "What is this amazing thing I've been chosen for?" And I woke up and thought, "Wow, whatever this is the biggest gift of my life." It was a few weeks later that I found out I was pregnant.
Huh.
So grateful for that dream because it showed me that this being was choosing me.
You know, glad this is fascinating.
Cherished her coming to me.
When I was pregnant, I asked for a dream. I said, "What in what lifetime have I known Megan?" And I dreamed I was in a warehouse. My water broke. I was alone, and I picked her up, and she opened her eyes and she said, "Iceland." I thought, "Iceland? Oh my God, I don't know what that means." But I've always had this thing about going to Iceland. So we'll see.
Oh, you got to go. We went to Iceland. It's an amazingly...
That's what I've heard.
Magical country, right?
Yeah. So, Nisha, I understand that you had your first experience when you were 18 months old. Can you talk a little bit about that? Or maybe the mother needs to talk about that, Norma.
Talking about it, and then my mom can chime in too. So,
like, can you remember it yourself, or is it?
Yeah, I do remember it. It's
okay.
Amazing how memory works too, right? Because the stories that we get told then do anchor themselves in our memory. Uh-huh. So, but I have quite a few memories from when I was a very small baby, and this is one of them, which was a dream experience that you're referencing, where I had this dream that I was down in a tunnel with a tiger, and I woke up from it.
Wow.
I was like pulling back the sheets, looking. My mom came over and she's like, "What are you doing, honey? What's going on?" And then I said, the tiger, it was just down here, down this hook within the bed. She, like, again, beautifully, because she knew about dream work and she knew about drumming journeys too and shamanic journeys and how those take you down through a tunnel, you dig down into the earth. She had that aha moment of like, "Oh, I think my daughter just had her first shamanic."
Wow.
So she really then jumped into it with me and she was helping me dig. And then she was like, "You know what was down there? Like, what did you see?" And I was like, "There was a tiger down there." And then she helped me to realize in my young self that that was one of my power animals. And we talked about how the tiger's energy could help me in my waking reality, dealing with kids on the, you know, in the preschool playground, or, you know, like little kids dealing with, and how I could use the tiger's roar if I needed to sometimes. And so that was just a really beautiful example of how, yeah, instead of some parents might be like, "Oh, what are you talking about? Like, that was just a dream. Let's go make breakfast," or whatever. She really encouraged me and valued that space that I was working with and in. And so then I could have the tiger as a longtime power animal and know what that meant, and have that that power and that powerful experience in my psyche from a young time.
Did that tiger help you on the playground?
Help me. Like
going around biting kids.
Fighting, right? Yeah, you have to learn how the power animal energy
translates. Right.
Yeah. But being to have that strength and that power that the tiger holds.
Yeah. Norma, could you talk about the audience for your book? It seems like there's more and more people who might tune into what you're writing about.
Yes. I hope that the audience could be anybody who wants to realize their abilities to be in the dream time and to bring the dream time and ordinary reality into more harmony and to really become a more empowered person that way. Okay. But to get more specific about the audience, lots of people are experimenting with psychedelics nowadays. And so that's one audience we want to reach, to let them know that in ancient trainings, indigenous trainings around the planet, that it was always taught that there were a lot of precursor trainings before entering into the deep end. So young people were trained in they're working with their dreams and trained in how to go into these lucid states, both in the dreams, but then through the trance-induced drumming journey. There's a lot to learn in our own psyche before we enter into a third consciousness. There's two consciousnesses in our own selves, our self and the other. That's like Martin Buber, the theologian, called the I-thou relationship. Joseph Campbell referred to it that way too, that we must learn this relationship inside of ourselves, because we're not just there being able to do whatever we want and use powers in whatever way we want. It's not the truth about ordinary reality or the dream time. We have to learn how to interact relationally, right? We are interbeing in these realms, and we've got to learn our proper ways of dealing with power, following after power and not misusing power, right? So there are all these ways that we've got to be trained. I just was looking at the movies last night and the new version of Training Your Dragon.
How to Train a Dragon.
It shows how it's really training the human, you know?
Uh-huh.
You know? And so that's what has to happen. We humans need to be trained in navigating these realms in the right relationships with power. And so I hope that our audience will find a curiosity in our birthright, you know, our given abilities as humans, that at this time in history too, we humans need to come awake to the powers that we do have and use them with impeccability, with not misusing power, so that we can really help the macrocosm to transform in ways that need to happen rapidly now.
See, Jung talked about this too, you know, in his archetypal way.
Right. I'm a Jungian trained psychologist.
Mm-hmm. I love Jung. I mean, his red book is everything that he went through, you know, all the craziness, the looking for the answers, just everything. It's just it's mind-boggling.
Did you know this? Maybe you know this, but I love to note this about Jung, because how is his methodology so accurate? Well, when he was very confused and hurt by his relationship with Freud and seeing Freud's misuse of power, Jung went to Africa, and he went back and forth for 12 years and worked with shamans there, and then came back and wrote Jungian psychology. And then he didn't really allow that to be known publicly until after he died. And he said he was afraid that it wouldn't be as respected if it came from Africa. But I think that was an example of appropriation. Mm-hmm. Like, he really should have acknowledged where it was all coming from. But it's a very accurate shamanic methodology, which is why it works. It's of this ancient teaching on planet Earth, you know.
You know, I went to Europe once, and I had a very specific goal of mine when I went to Switzerland. I wanted to go to Bollingen to see his castle on Lake Zurich. And the woman I was traveling with, we left from Zurich, missed our first train. If we hadn't missed that train, we would not have met Jung's grandson, who was in the backyard of the castle throwing a ball to his dog. You know, I mean, it was just such a common, you know, he was having fun. I walked up to him, told him we were from Florida, and we talked about synchronicity for about 30 minutes, and that was it. But I've always remembered that because it really was the missed train that allowed us to do that.
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah. It really was.
I always think that there's angels out there pushing us to get now.
Right.
On that train now. Push him over there.
Yeah.
Let's have them get together here.
Get those dragons in the right place.
It's like when you're in a bookstore and a book falls off the shelf, mm-hmm. you know, and you pick it up and, you know, it's that's the one you wanted to find. I mean, that there's something in there that you needed to read. That's just that little message coming through. Nisha, I wanted to ask you if you could talk a little bit about lucid dreaming and for example, and how it differs from out-of-body experiences.
That's a great question. Yeah, talking about lucid dreaming and talking about the two different states, because I do find that they have similarities and yet they are different. So lucid dreaming, like I mentioned earlier, is a dream where you realize beyond a doubt that you're dreaming within the dream, and then it shifts its quality and you're able to have this level of agency. And I say agency rather than control, because like my mom was talking about earlier, people think sometimes, oh, I have complete control once I'm in a lucid dream. I can do whatever I want. But I found, and many other lucid dreamers have found, that you actually don't have complete control. You're interacting with another consciousness, which you can think of as your deep unconscious. You can think of it as your higher self, God, the universe, however you want to, your guides, right? However you want to frame it. But you are interacting with its other consciousness. So within the lucid dream, you're able to do these things that are amazing because you know you're dreaming. And so you can fly, you can summon friends, you can travel to extraordinary otherworldly places. And have these really transformative and transcendent experiences that are very beautiful, very empowering. And you wake up from a lucid dream oftentimes feeling that same level of personal empowerment because you've just gone into your inner world, into your dream time, and had these really beautiful experiences. And you can take that same level of agency into your waking reality and seeing how much in a lucid dream your mind, your brain is creating reality. And that same thing can be said for our waking reality. Our brains are constantly piecing together through the sensorial inputs what our reality is. So you learn how to work with your mind and your vision and what lenses you're looking through, how much those really impact your reality. So that's a little bit about lucid dreaming. And then out-of-body experiences, one area that they very much differ is that whereas a lucid dream begins within the dream material, realizing I'm dreaming inside of the dream, an out-of-body experience oftentimes begins in your waking environment. So you're in your bedroom and in your sleeping body, and then your lucid consciousness, your awareness comes back online. And oftentimes people will have the experience of sleep paralysis where you can't move, but you start to wake up. And this is because naturally your body is always paralyzed when you are dreaming. So you don't act out your dreams. Most of the time that wears off before your awareness starts to come back online. But sometimes the reverse happens where your awareness starts to come back online, but your sleeping body is still immobilized. And so from that space, it can be very scary. And we teach a lot about how to work with the fear in that space. But once you are able to move through that fear, it's actually the perfect opportunity to have an out-of-body experience because, again, your lucid awareness is coming back, but your body is immobilized. So you can actually pull your dream body up out of your physical sleeping body. And it's kind of like Velcro sometimes, pulling it out. And then from there, you're in your environment, but it's a liminal realm. It's kind of in between So you can turn around. A lot of people will have the experience of looking back at your sleeping body and it's like, whoa, there's my body there, but I'm out here in my dream body. And then from that space, you can go on to have amazing experiences that oftentimes are a little bit closer to waking in ordinary reality. One quick example I'll give is that I was having an out-of-body experience in my room, and I thought, okay, I wonder if I could travel a far distance to go visit my friend in Hawaii, to go all the way there. And I was in Oregon at the time. And so I pictured a beach that I knew that he lived by. And sure enough, I was able to transport myself over to that beach space in Hawaii. And I was like, oh, I made it here. And then I pictured his room. And so then I was able to transfer my out-of-body dream body to his room. And then I was there. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to look at where everything is. I'm going to step carefully. And then when I wake up, I'm going to call him and see if this is actually where everything was. And so I looked at it, I studied the room, and I woke up and I called him up. And sure enough, his surfboard was over here, the post over there where he had written.
That's cool.
So with out-of-body experiences, like you're hearing, you can have journeys that are closer to this waking reality and move through this waking reality.
Just real quick, because it's been a while since I've given a song recommendation on the podcast. and in this case, it's maybe even a little extra relevant, because you said you guys are in Oregon. Well, this band is from Washington State. I believe it was Bellevue. Band called Queensryche that has a song called Silent Lucidity. An amazing song about lucid dreaming. So everybody go check that out. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, John's a musician, and he upgrades us from time to time with some good tunes on the podcast. So
Have either one of you been to the Monroe Institute?
As a matter of fact, we're quite connected with it, and they've asked to teach in Italy in November.
Oh, wow.
We're going to be teaching at their big European gathering.
Great. Yeah, I kind of figured the way you were talking about out of body that you were familiar with that Monroe's work. And
Robert Monroe and his work and his book were very impactful to me in my beginning days, especially of learning about out of body experiences. And he teaches a lot, for those that don't know, about how to have out of body experiences and what to do in those spaces. And he talks a lot about remote viewing, like about going to the astral realms, helping souls to journey from this plane into other planes through out-of-body experiences. So the conference that we're going to be teaching at is called Consciousness Unveiled, and that's in November.
What are you going to teach specifically?
We'll be teaching about lucid dreaming and to find purpose through your lucid dreams.
We're in Italy, Ron. We need to go.
We'd love to. Yeah, it's at a beautiful resort spa where, you know, when you get your room, you also get massages and
Nice.
All the good physical stuff.
Exactly. I'm trying to remember the exact town that
we'll,
it's in.
We'll have to look up the exact town.
Okay.
Consciousness Unveiled, Monroe Institute, then you can find the detail.
So Robert Monroe's book, Journeys Out of Body, is fascinating, and he talks about all these different levels of consciousness dimensions. He uses some kind of code numbers for the different dimensions he talks about, and he also gives a description of how to enter into an out-of-body experience. And I've had these experiences before, but they're never at the time that I attempted to create them. I followed his method over and over, but have never gotten out that way. But yet they come, you know, just like automatically to me once in a while, not all the time by any means, but they have. And so do you have a particular method that you recommend people to use?
Yeah, you know, I think that's such a good point that you're making. And I have found a similar thing to be true, where I've tried his techniques and I think that they do really work for some people. And, you know, there's the sound methodology and using the hemi-sync and whatnot.
Right.
And yet I've found that with out-of-body experiences, a sleep paralysis state, like I was saying earlier, can be a prime opportunity, especially if that's something people are experiencing often, struggle with. So I really teach about how to do it through that way. But again, that takes it naturally occurring within themselves. And I find that lucid dreaming is an easier point to enter for everybody with being able to learn the actual teachings that you do, the practices that you do during the day. And that is training your mind then to become lucid at night. And through that pathway, I find that that's a much easier way for everybody to be able to access these states. And then through a lucid dream, you can sometimes enter into out-of-body experiences too, if you have that intention. But entering the out-of-body state, like Rob, you were just saying, just from the daytime practice can be challenging. Area though that can help you to practice in that is the drumming journeys, because those give you the ability to take your waking consciousness from this ordinary reality into a non-ordinary state, into a trance state. And it's not an out-of-body experience necessarily, but it really does transfer your consciousness from lucidity or from waking awareness into this lucid in between liminal state. And so that's another thing that I would guide people towards if they're wanting to have more out-of-body experiences, is either learning or both learning lucid dreaming and the daytime practices you can do to induce lucidity, and then the drumming journeys, which I'll pass it over to you.
I first learned about the drumming journeys in 1979 when Michael Harner first came back from the Amazon and was introducing to our Western culture, North American culture, this amazing technique that is used by, of course, shamans in the Amazon, but all over the world, to induce a certain brainwave pattern that has you go into a lucid state of consciousness, but while you're awake. So when people hear drumming journey, they think, oh, just drumming or something, but they don't realize what we're talking about. It's a advanced methodology of training the brain in a certain state of consciousness that you then have access to these liminal realms. And there's a progression of what happens in the human psyche. So starting all those years ago to learn it and then eventually become a teacher of going into the altered state that way, I've, of course, then heard thousands and thousands of journeys and done it with people all over the world. And it's amazing to see how people in Japan or Europe or South America all go to similar geographical terrains within the psyche. So that to me means that these places exist. It's too dry. And so I've done a lot of mapping of those terrains. And so that's one of the things that we talk a lot about in the book, that there are these inner maps that we have to discover through the journeying process that are then held by these larger maps that are general navigational zones that we're supposed to go to. So there's lots to learn, right? And we're all neophytes in a way, you know, but there's so much that you can be trained in as to how to go into these liminal states through the drumming journey.
Now, do you do drumming yourself, or is this recorded? I mean, how?
I do it myself, because I find that the energy that comes through is the vehicle as I'm drumming, ignites the situation. But I do have recordings of me drumming, but I prefer to do it, like I do it on Zoom. Been doing that for years and years, and it's a good way to do it with groups and individuals.
Right. Now, you're going to do this in Italy, the drumming.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But there's, but Nisha, isn't use of psychedelics a quicker way than the drumming?
It is, right? It brings the dream time into ordinary reality in many ways, and it layers the two on top of each other. And so in some ways, it can be good as these punctuation points for people, especially when we get so stuck in our habitual ways of seeing and so stuck in believing ordinary reality is the only thing that exists. Then having that veil lifted temporarily and being able to see and experience this really intense level of the dream time of non-ordinary reality becoming present in ordinary reality can be very shifting for people, can shift them out mm-hmm. of habitual stuck ways of viewing. And yeah, what we talk about, which I think you're alluding to in your question, is that people need to also learn the slower pacing of how mm-hmm. to work with their psyches and how to work with these non-ordinary realities. And even though they're not a quick fix, even, you know, with the drumming journeys and with lucid dreaming, you have to work step by step mm-hmm. at getting your skill set built up. I almost think of it like working your muscles out. You're working lucidity. And back to the out-of-body experiences, as I've had more and more out-of-body experiences, I've actually seen my dream body form more. It's become solid because I'm giving more energy, more lucidity to it each time that I have an out-of-body experience. So it started kind of like a faint glowing figure, and now it's gotten more and more light, and it's a blue light. Huh. And so it's just cool to, it's an example of how the more energy you put into something, the more energy you put into these out of body and non-ordinary states of reality experiences, then the more power you gather there. So we really teach people about, yes, our culture can be so oriented towards these quick fixes or towards immediate gratification. I want to do this thing right now. And learning how through your own volition, through your own will, to continually build up in these skills provides a big gift that you miss otherwise when you just like jump ahead. So there's nothing wrong with doing psychedelics. They can lift the veil, mm-hmm. give you this really intense experience of non-ordinary reality. But then to take the time beforehand and afterwards with integration to really do these practices to then build up your personal power in those realms, so you don't feel like you're dependent on this external source mm-hmm. to be the source of your access to non-ordinary reality. No, you realize that within yourself all the time, like my mom was saying earlier, as a birthright, we have access to these spaces and we just need to cultivate the skills and the learning of how to work in those realms.
You said your body shines more blue. Well, Norma, was that like the blue beings you saw?
I know. I think
that's interesting. I love that.
Right? It does feel very connected. And I was saying that had this time when I heard it, I've also had experiences where through out-of-body experiences, I was using a mirror to transport myself to places. So I had a physical mirror in my room. And when I would get in an out-of-body state in my room, then I would use that mirror intending where I wanted to go once I stepped through it. And I'm like, Wonderland through the looking glass.
I'm going to try that. That's great.
I recommend people to try it if they are working in these realms. And there was this one place that I would continually visit in lucid dreams too that felt like this home base. And the key to it was that it had black sand and a red ocean. And so I imagined very strongly in this out-of-body state that when I walked through the mirror, I would go to that space. And I did. I walked through. And then when I was in that space, I was walking along the beach. It was really beautiful. It felt like home in a lot of ways. And I looked down and my legs were purple and blue.
Oh, interesting.
Mom was saying,
yeah,
there is this, you know, home template body outside.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What about the mirror itself? Were you able to see yourself in the mirror before you went through it?
Yes. And that is another really powerful practice to do when dreams or out of body experiences, because I feel like, again, with the gathering of your dream body, this gathering of being able to see your face in the mirror that slowly builds. And sometimes it will look like a different face or it'll be shifting. But I've had many lucid dream experiences where I'm looking in the mirror and it's like the building of this skill too, of being able to bring form into that realm. And it feels like an accomplishment because sometimes the mirror will be blank and you're like, wait, where am I? Seeing your face from this reality and then seeing multidimensional faces from other realities, it's a really profound experience.
Interesting.
Yeah. I had one out-of-body experience. I was telling Trish about this yesterday that I think it's relevant here, because the experience was, I wasn't aware of really going to sleep at all, but I was aware of being out of body, and I was in the desert. There was a circle of people with a fire, and this was many years ago. And Carlos Castaneda was there and was talking about dreaming. Now, this was at a point several months before The Art of the Dreaming came out. And at that time, I was unaware of him ever really writing much at all about dreaming. And but I had been studying dreaming myself. And so I made a comment to him. He turned right on me and said, "You're in 11th dimension kindergarten, out," and boom, I was in my bed. I woke up. How did I get here? What happened? I was in the desert.
It was 11th dimension kindergarten.
I think I'm still there. I don't know.
It's great. I love that book of his too. I do recommend it to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You disassociate him with all the teachings around psychedelics, but that book really does talk about lucid dreaming and experience.
Yeah, and the shocking thing for me with that experience was like 3-4 months later, Trish and I went to the American Booksellers Association annual convention. It was in Miami Beach, and I was walking down this aisle, this huge conference facility, and walking down the aisle, all these different publishers, and there in front of me is a big poster of the new book by Carlos Castaneda, The Art of Dreaming. And so that was, significant
like
to
your
me.
Confirmation.
That, right. Yeah.
That you're still in the 11th dimension kindergarten.
Maybe first grade. I don't know.
Affirmations, like I'm hearing with you, that we really do go places. And you know, it can be sometimes, especially with our culture, easy to like kind of write it off, like, oh, that was just a dream. But then when we get affirmations and waking reality of, wait a minute, now he just came out with this book. Yeah, you probably were there. If they'll get to sit up working on the dream.
So, yeah. I mean,
that brings up. Go ahead.
But no, go ahead.
Add on to this thing that there are many purposes in us getting better at navigating in liminal realms and going into our dream time. We're called to do work in the dream time too. For example, for myself, for many years during the nighttime, I would be taken to places around the world where people were dying, and I would be there to help them make that transition. And it happened over and over and over again. But one time, I say spirit, great spirit, allowed me to have an affirmation that it really was happening. I dreamt that I was going to Japan, and there was a recreation center, and I was guided to go into the recreation center and talk to the teachers and say, look, a tsunami is coming, and it's crash over the building, and let's draw the children all together in a circle and start singing together, so they won't be afraid. And so then I was there with them, and I saw the big tsunami coming and crashing in over the building. And the next day, I didn't typically turn on the radio, but I turned on the radio and the news came on just as I turned it on, that there had been a big tsunami in Japan, and the one thing destroyed was a recreational center where all the children and teachers died. I got on the news and knew that I had been there helping them. So
it
happened to me over and over again in the dream time, you know, being taken to help people.
Let me ask you a question, though. Could you have, in that dream time, protected the children, taken them elsewhere so that they could avoid the death, or had they chosen this?
It was not possible because it was happening too suddenly. You know, it was, and in each of the situations that I was going to, it wasn't possible to avoid the death. So, is that your question? Happening. And it wasn't about changing it or avoiding it.
Okay.
But preparing them to not be afraid of transition. And I think that's what one way to define the work of a shaman too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Taking people before death into these liminal realms, into the underworld, into facing death, so that you're not afraid when the death of leaving this mortal coil behind uh-huh. body does happen, because you have practiced and you realize that you are greater than this body, and that you have ways of navigating the bardos, getting through the transition into the state of consciousness, that you're not losing your consciousness. Carlos Castaneda talked about that in the book, The Eagle's Gift.
Uh-huh.
Many people are heading toward their death unconsciously, like a train going toward its destination swiftly. And without consciousness, they are just scooped up by the great eagle at the end and lose all consciousness. But that our hope is to come to some modicum of consciousness before we die, gathering our power, calls it, so that we don't just go out of this body without that consciousness.
Mm-hmm. But that's lucid dreaming. You know, that's the same thing of you are learning that, yes, I exist beyond this just waking reality, and I have the same level of awareness and consciousness as I do in my waking reality. I can bring lucidity into this state, so I don't need to be as afraid of death, because I am practicing staying lucid, right, staying aware in non-ordinary reality where I don't have this physical body with me. And so I feel like lucid dreaming for people can be a really powerful practice, again, in beginning to feel less anxiety around when they do pass on, because they've had this practice of being lucid in the dream state.
What do you think Alzheimer's, what does that do to somebody's state of mind as they pass?
Right.
I mean, it's
my own dear mother's going through getting dementia now, so I'm getting to go through that with her. And for a human to lose their conscious awareness, which many, many do before leaving the body, I think is a particular type of experience that that person is having, you know, of letting go of consciousness while still in the body. But then as to what that means after they leave the body, you know, I really believe that then, you know, you come to a fuller consciousness,
uh-huh,
leave the body, so that the consciousness would be regained, and that you look back on the human experience like, wow, I had to go through that.
I asked because my mother had Alzheimer's, and my sense was that she was always afraid of death. And so if you're not entirely aware of where you are right now, yeah, you're more aware of the other reality. And because we'd go visit her and she'd say, oh, my brother was just here. Well, she was the last surviving person in her family. And one time I was with a psychic friend, and my friend says, well, is his name Dick? My mother says, yeah, Dick was here. And my friend Millie says, he's sitting at the foot of the bed. She could see spirits. So that, for me, whenever she told me her mother had visited, I knew that that was true for her. You know?
Right. The veil between the worlds.
Right.
And she was available to the other dimensions.
That's true.
Wow.
And psychedelics do that, make that veil thin. But there's a lot of fear factors for a lot of people, too, that have these experiences. Have you worked with groups of people, Nisha, doing psychedelics and come across that kind of encounter?
That the group work is actually more of what my mom does with psychedelics specifically,
okay, yeah,
lucid dreaming.
Okay, yeah.
I'll say quickly and then I'll pass it over to her that one of the reasons we wrote this book is about that too. The uh-huh. fear can happen, that can come up for people as mm-hmm. they are venturing in these mm-hmm. very expanded states and not knowing how to navigate. That's
yeah.
why there were the trainings throughout cultures all over the world on preparing people to be able to know their psyches and to see what shadows might arise, because psychedelics oftentimes do come with the shadow material then presenting uh-huh. itself.
Yeah.
And so if you don't know how to work with shadow material, if you don't know how to transmute it within yourself, then when it presents itself, you can have a bad trip, right? You can have an experience that you are fragmented further by, rather than being healed by and integrating it. And so normally, yeah.
Working for many years with my Indigenous teachers, you're trained in gradually learning how to trust your guide. So that's a big step. You know, you've got to make this relationship with a guide, and in the drumming journey way of doing it, you meet an animal that is your power animal. So you're learning to follow after power. Even Rudolf Steiner said the animals are a little lower than the angels, and they're a gift to us to teach us, you know. So we're taught to link up with and gradually become one with our power animal guide. So that gives you a protector and a guide in the other realms. And so there's all these stages of learning how to follow after power. So lots of times when people talk about their fears in psychedelics, they say, but what happens when you meet these entities, and what should I do with the entities? Well, if you take a gradual training, you're taught how to be with your being, the power animal that's your guide, and then you learn discernment about other entities, because there are other beings there. But lots of times people are just out there without learning how to connect with their own guide, and then vulnerable and pray to other beings that do exist there, and they don't know discernment and how to interact with them. So that's one cautionary teaching. And then, I teach this whole method in the Journey to Completion, which I created many years ago in the 1990s after all of my years of work with Indigenous elders, and they gave me permission to teach this whole way of training people in a step-by-step organic process about how to be safe in navigating in altered states. The Journey to Completion, I have a website called that, journeytocompletion.com, that you can look at. But I've been training people in individual settings and with groups for many, many years. So thousands of people have been trained in this Journey to Completion method, which is, as I say, it's a carefully orchestrated pathway according to each person's readiness. It's an organic rhythm that you start to learn within yourself that teaches you when you're ready for the next step and when you're ready for the next step. Mm-hmm. So it's safe to approach it all.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have walk into these psychedelic-like experiences without really expecting what is going to happen. I'm thinking specifically about people who eat too many gummies. This is, people, talk to anybody who works in the emergency room. They get people all the time who are just totally freaked out and thinking that this is the way they're going to be the rest of their life, you know, and very, very fearful. And, I've done that myself, but I just sat in the same chair for 4 hours. You know, I didn't want to go to any hospital. I felt fine. couldn't move.
Advice too for a person who's experiencing a lot and it's stabilizing and scary. Just stay seated and try to have another human there that can help.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
But being a therapist, I've counseled many, many people that have, had trouble coming back from that, come all the way back from altered states, or end up having an increased inner split, which is what psychosis is. It's a split within ourselves that we're not able to heal. So it's really important to work with a therapist too, you know. So just want to put that out to people. But I have a good therapist who can help you integrate your inner traumas, because that is what will be brought up. Your inner traumas, your traumas from your childhood. That's the purpose of expanding our awareness and of psychedelics, is to help us to heal these splits within ourselves that have been caused by trauma. So it's very important to go into the altered state with intent. And so that's how I teach people. The beginning stages, you know, what is your intent? Well, what stage of your shadow material are you getting ready to work with? So, you know, before using the psychedelics, we do a lot of work about encountering the shadow material, the repressed material, gradually, so that whatever comes up, you're ready to deal with and also ready to receive the gift out of it, which I train people in a whole method of how to mute the powers of the repressed material of the shadow so that they don't overwhelm you, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes people get really overwhelmed in the psychedelic space and have like near-death experiences or things.
Right, yeah.
Well, in the 60s, I did acid one time with a person who just totally freaked out. I mean, that was, there was no guidance, no nothing. I just sat there, are you okay? Are you okay? You don't know what to do when that's happening to somebody else.
Right. So then,
unless you're a therapist.
Especially if you're tripping yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Good to be with a highly trained person. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess that lots of people are facilitating nowadays who've had minimal experience in psychonavigation. So I'm a very advanced, experienced trainer in those realms. And I really recommend that people try to find, an elder. Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Somebody.
Norma, I wanted to ask you, back in the day when you were working with and studying with Florinda Donner and Taisha Abelard and Carol Tiggs, did you get involved with tensegrity?
That hadn't become popular yet then.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
That was later. Okay. That was towards the end of Castaneda's life. Right. Yeah.
It was more than 90s, and this was in the 80s.
Are any of those women still alive, do you know?
Well, that is...
They kind of disappeared, I believe.
Yeah.
Didn't they?
They told us they were going to disappear.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was always wondering, did they? And so we've researched and found that one story is that their car was found out in the desert, way out in the desert, and no trace of them.
Yeah, I heard one story of...
And they were going to another dimension, and that no one would be able to find their bodies.
I heard one story that body was found, or his bones were found, and they thought it was might have been one of them, but I don't know if it's true or not.
Wow.
Right. Great mystery.
Yeah.
Like a documentary needs to be made on.
Yeah, right. I think so, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you need to...
Yeah.
Right. The thing is, time walking, it exists, where your whole physical body might go. And I was describing how at night my soul body would go to these other places and physically be there. Right. But then there's many skills that I think that we all need to hone and wake up to, right?
It would help the world, especially politicians, if you guys were teaching them.
I've had nighttime dreams where I am teaching the...
Oh, thank God. Thank God somebody is.
Sure, right? They have dreams. I'm
True.
They're having in their dream time, right? So you never know, right? The full truth of all of who we are and of what we're doing in other dimensions, right?
And we also feel excited at this time when we're getting our books out there and our teachings about, like you're saying, being able to reach people that are in positions of power, that are in positions where they're making these big decisions that are impacting all of us, to be able to help them work with their shadows, work with different times, and become more integrated and walk with integrity, so that they can then have that impact on the greater world too. So I feel like a time now. And it's interesting how different tech leaders are experimenting with psychedelics. And people are coming to expand their consciousness, but then, like we're saying, a lot of times not quite knowing how to or what, how to integrate, how to walk the path. So it feels like a really important time for these teachings to spread far and wide so that people can know how to better work with these powers that they're coming back to within themselves. And they're
one thing that seems to be missing is empathy. We don't seem to be an empathic world anymore. Right. Or maybe we are, but it just doesn't show.
That's such a good point, because the Weechul talk about it's a path of heart.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient teachings are teaching humans that you don't just have this power from your mind. Without heart, you really only have it through the path of heart, which is the path of empathy. So, so I teach people as a beginning tool, nonviolent communication, which is all about having self-empathy, having empathy for others. Yes, we've got to, such a good point you're making, Trish, that we've got to understand empathy, give it to ourselves for our own trauma,
right,
and be able to have empathy for others, right? Because that's a non-dualistic perspective.
Exactly.
It's the beginning of shadow work, you know, to realize I've got my inner healing that I have to do. It's not about the enemy out there, not projecting our wounded views onto others around us, right? There's a saying, there is no enemy out there. It's all about healing our dualistic perspective, ourselves, and coming to the integration and wholeness of perspective on all others so that we are using our power properly that way.
Okay, I think that's a good place to end it. We've come to the end of our hour. And
yeah, but tell people where they can find you and your websites and all, your book and all that.
Definitely. Thanks for the great interview. And our website is luciddreaminglucidliving.com.
All right.
On that website, you'll find links to both of our books, as well as we're launching a lot of online courses right now, which is
great,
because it's a way for people to take these classes.
Important.
Right? And to learn these things in a deeper way. So on our website, you'll find information about that. There's also a free course available now there for people to sign up for. And then on social media, I like to post a lot of bite-sized chunks. And so our Instagram is Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living, same thing. And our YouTube channel, same thing, Lucid Dreaming, Lucid Living.
Huh.
And then, like my mom mentioned earlier, her website for the Journey to Completion, the work that she does, is journeytocompletion.com. And then she also has a website, normaburton.com, which is a great way to get in contact with her for the shadow work and the deep trauma healing that she does.
Well, you two are busy.
Yeah, great. This was fun.
Was wonderful.
The hour just blew by.
Great questions.
Okay.
Oh, this was so much fun.
Yeah,
thank you so much. And when the link, when John tells us when it goes up, I'll send you all the link.
Wonderful.
Okay. Good to know you. Thank you.
You too. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thanks for joining The Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening, and stay mystical.